Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 193, recording this on Friday, the 25th of November, 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield for All About Symbian, and with me I have three helpful hobos. That's Mr. Ray Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. David Gilson.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Ewan Spence.
Helpful hobo.
Yeah, I don't know what it means either. Just sound
I mean,
right.
Am I a small dog running around America helping people out of tricky situations with their parents?
I don't know. You're helpful and you're all full of helpful advice, technical information, and good bonhomie, as you will find out during this podcast. Let's start off with the Nokia 701, though. It's the big new Symbian device. We managed to get it through channels other than the recommended retail ones in the UK, because there aren't any, Rafe, because you had to buy it, which is an interesting way to get a device that Nokia aren't actually pushing it in this country. But we are a worldwide podcast, aren't we? So we really had to cover this. I think the 701, and a few people will read my two-part review on the site, I very much considered it a flagship in many ways, which may sound strange, but yeah, I think flagship suits it, Rafe.
Yes, I agree with you. I haven't used it for as long as Steve has. He's been doing the review, which I hope you've all read by now. But I was, you know, rather taken by this handset. I mean, I liked the C7 the first time around, so I was probably predisposed to like the 701. But given the sort of various bumps, and that's both under the hood in terms of things like the faster processor, and I think the graphics processor in particular is significant there, as well as, of course, delivering the Bell software out of the box. It's actually, you know, arguably the best Symbian phone you can buy right now. I think the, you know, claimant obviously is the N8 and the E7 as flagships, and once they get the Bell update, then yeah, Things will be a lot more even. But even so, in technical terms at least, if you ignore the camera and aren't talking about form factor or screen size, the 701 will remain right up there, and I think it's an extremely attractive device. But as you say, it's not launched in the UK. That's true of quite a few European markets as well. You will be able to get it in some places. It's pretty competitively priced, actually. I mean, I think I've seen it talk of it about €250 in some European markets, and obviously it'll be equivalent price there in Asia. Sometimes it'll be a bit more expensive, obviously depends on the local tax regime. I actually picked up R1 via eBay for around that mark in pounds, which is, I thought, was a pretty competitive price for a smartphone. I mean, if you're looking at anything else which has kind of the equivalent in terms of, you know, being towards the top end, you are looking at £300 plus. So all in all, I think it's a pretty competitive device. And although, yes, it's priced for the mid-tier, I'd actually certainly put it at the upper end there. And so, you know, if people are looking to buy a Symbian smartphone for the first time, I'd certainly direct them in the direction of something, yeah, like the 701, or if you're, say, coming up from something like the 5800 or the 5230 and you like the Symbian operating system and want to stay with it, for which there are many reasons to do so, despite what you might read elsewhere in the tech press, I actually think the 701 is probably my pick of the current phones, you know, if you're not interested in the camera speciality or the sort of E7 form factor. So,
And even then, the camera, as I reported in my review part one, is significantly improved. I mean, not just a small tweak, it's significantly improved, not in the optics, but who would have thought that the image processing hardware would have such a huge impact? I mean, there's been dramatic reduction in edge enhancement, a dramatic reduction in the amount of noise, a dramatic reduction in how close you can photograph while the image processing can still handle it, down to 35 centimetres. I think that for most people, they're not actually going to notice this is off. They're going to pick up the 701, think, okay, everything I take looks pretty darn crisp and clear. This will do me.
Well, that's right. I mean, I can hear the Edof critics screaming in the background, but we do like Edof around here. But I think people who have been a bit sniffy about it in the past really should give it a second look here, because, as you say, I mean, you look at the evidence from the Steve did a photo comparison. It really is there. And you know, it comes down to just the real-world usage. Yes, if you know what you're looking for, everything being in focus is always a bit of a giveaway with EDOF, and you can't maybe do the artsy photos, but that's not how most people use them. You know, they want to use them to capture an event, yeah, some kind of memory. And for that, as Steve was saying there, I think the 701's actually arguably as good as some of the more specialist camera phones. You know, if you're looking at that kind of memory capture capability and the chance that you'll get something good when you capture a shot, whereas, you know, the N8, undoubtedly a great camera, and you see the other high-end smartphones, you know, be it the N9, the Lumia 800, the iPhone, all of those auto, you know, they're all autofocus cameras, and they're capable of capturing absolutely great shots. but it is equally possible to capture some appalling shots with them. So I would be willing to bet, in a sort of all-round comparison, the 701 would probably produce decent shots at a higher sort of frequency than some of these other kinds. Maybe they wouldn't they'd never match quite the same quality, because, you know, the sensors are bigger or the optics are different. But, you know, don't write it off. I mean, it actually really needs to be used. And, you know, the real world comparison is the one that matters to me, as I think, especially at this kind of price point where we are talking about me too. It's not the same as comparing a top-end camera phone.
Yeah. Of course, as you mentioned there, the N8 itself will probably inherit the title of Symbian flagship when it gets Bell. I know it won't have quite the processor and quite the RAM, but the combination of that camera and Bell, I think, will be pretty compelling and take the N8 well into next year, at which point we hope, well, maybe then there will be an N8 successor running Symbian. Who knows? We certainly couldn't comment on that. We haven't any official information. It's simply my sincere and personal hope that Nokia don't abandon the concept. So,
Well, what we can say is Nokia promised more devices. And I think if you look at the current Bell lineup, there is room for, you know, something at the top end. And, you know, people talk about the fact that Windows Phone has replaced Symbian. That's a process that's going to happen gradually over several years. And what it is safe to say is Windows Phone devices aren't ready for every market or every person right now. You know, there's more development to come. And so there's very definitely a gap. And it may not, you know, it might be like the 701, it might not get as wide a release. But there, I think there is room for kind of a high-end Symbian device in terms of, you know, either the camera or the specifications, bigger screen, something like that. So while, you know, that nothing official has been announced, for me, there's definitely a gap there. And I think it's a question of whether Nokia has a commitment to release it. I mean, I would imagine, given the way these things work, you know, phone development is a two-year life cycle, there's something on the roadmap or something in the works from Nokia. It's really just a question of whether they decide to release it or not, and that's really dependent on the economics. You know, do they think it can be a viable handset? So there's something there. I would just say I'd encourage and hope that Nokia do actually go ahead and release it.
Now, that one niggle I had with these Nokia 700 and the 701 and with Symbian Bell in general, which is probably worth talking about. David, I've just sent you the Nokia 700, so you've got Bell as well on board, and I'm desperate we can get you in something at some point. Some of the fonts are rather erratic. Now, this erratic fonts have been a feature of Symbian for the last 10 years. People shouldn't really be surprised. As we go from screen size to different resolutions and different from non-touch to touch, the use of consistent fonts has always been a bit of a bugbear. But with Bell, I think they've really, you know, thrown the caution to the wind in terms of a range. The home screen labels on the shortcut icons are absolutely minuscule. The notifications, the messages on the lock screen are not much bigger. And yet if you press the little more icon, bottom right of any screen for the traditional Symbian menu, those fonts are absolutely enormous. And the contrast between the two is just ridiculous. David, you probably haven't fired the 700 up yet, but maybe you can comment in future podcasts on whether you find it a problem. Rafe, you have played with Bell quite a bit over the last few months. Did you notice this range of fonts?
I have to say, I didn't notice it terribly. I mean, I can see what you mean when you talk about it in the review, and obviously something like this is quite personal and subjective. I mean, people said the same thing about font size on the E6. I haven't had a problem with that, but, you know, it does depend on your eyesight, your vision, what you think. I do agree with what you were saying about the lock screen in particular. You know, there's a large amount of screen real estate there, so why not use it? You know, make it so you can see it if it's sitting on the desk. You know, it's kind of that glanceability property, if you like. On the home screen in the launcher where things are, I think, you know, space is a bit more precious. I think people tend to recognize the icon and press that after a while rather than sort of reading the application label. The application label is almost a bonus. So I understand it being smaller there. And in terms of the menu, I actually think it's nice that those fonts are big because you can read them easily. But yes, there is perhaps an argument there could be a greater degree of consistency, but as I say, that is a little bit subjective. So I think people, you know, it's one of those things, check out for yourself and bear in mind that some of these font sizes you can actually change through the sort of settings of the phone itself.
But not the ones that I'm complaining about.
No, this is true.
David, any comments? You're about to try the 700. Do fonts bother you? You've seen the screenshots in my review.
To be honest, I was just looking at these screenshots now, I can see that, like, on the lock screen where it says one new message, that looks a little bit small, but it doesn't look like that great a range to me. But I'll see how it appears on the 700 without having a smaller screen. So, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, so of course the 700 has what is claimed to be a 3.2-inch screen. Now, Rafe, this maybe it's me being picky, but I measured it. I know that's just pretty anal of me, but I took a ruler and I measured it. I reckon the Nokia 700's got a 3.1-inch screen, and Nokia are exaggerating, which I guess makes the fonts even smaller for David. But any comment on this mismatch in inch specifications?
It doesn't surprise me because these things are generally rounded up to the newer thing, so I suspect it's probably 3.151 inches or something like that, and they've gone up to 3.2 inches. It can, I mean, when you actually look at the screens itself, it can be quite difficult to measure these things because often the screen element itself is buried down in the phone. But yes, when I saw the Nokia 700, there's no doubt it's got a small screen in terms of just the physical size of it. It kind of matches the rest of the device. And as we've said before on the podcast about the Nokia 700, you need to be sure about that screen size before you buy it. But then I suspect the people buying it are buying it because it's small. And there's a lot to be said for having a really tiny smartphone in your pocket. It's rather nice to see something opposing the trend for ever bigger and bigger screens and devices. I know Steve liked his screens big, but to be honest, I'm quite content with anything above 3.7, 3.8 inches feels a bit on the big side to me. But maybe that's a discussion for another time.
It's also worth commenting, of course, that the Nokia 700 has an AMOLED display with a CBD layer, whereas the 701 is IPS with CBD, and there's quite a big difference. Now, I'll go around the panel on this, but IPS, in-plane switching, basically, is that it's an LCD screen, and it's backlit, basically. So blacks aren't really black, but it's quite kind of bright and nice and clear, nevertheless, but it's not quite as rich and saturated, whereas AMOLED screens we've seen on the N8 and C7, E7, really, and 700, really very, very rich. Does it actually matter to you? Ewan, can I just go to you first? AMOLED or IPS, does it matter?
Do you know the one? It doesn't matter because you're looking at numbers and tech and stuff. What I've found is, like, does it look nice? That's the important thing for me. The one thing that I do like, though, is the organic screens. You have the clock on the screen all the time. And over the last year, now having switched over to other handsets, that, I think, is the thing I'm missing the most. The fact that with the E7, I can just pick it up and it tells me the time. I don't have to do anything. It's the most passively useful feature of the E7. There isn't that passivity available in some of these newer screen techs, and I miss knowing what the time is.
And David, I mean, you're a big fan of this Nokia sleeping screen, aren't you, on the N8? So I guess you'll really miss that with the if you went to the 701 or something with a TFT or LCD screen.
Oh, that's right. I feel just the same as you on that. And when I, for example, I had the Droid 2 and I put that next to some of my Symbian devices, and that just looks so unsaturated as well. But it's also depends on how good the AMOLED panel is as well, because, for example, I've got a range of devices. The Nexus 1 has got a pinky hue, and Nexus S has got a greeny hue. If I put the N8 next to the HTC Mozart, the N8 looks like it's got a slightly bluey hue. So, I think it's not just TFT versus AMOLED, it's AMOLED versus AMOLED as well.
So that means, David, you've got Huey, Louie, Dewey, and Pinky, yes?
Bravo.
Cartoon Network, but there you go.
Let's move on.
Can I say something, Steve?
Oh, go on then.
Aside from agreeing everything that's gone before, some of these comparisons are a little bit, it tends to be what phone reviewers do, is they've got hundreds of phones sitting next to each other to compare. In the real world, you don't often make that comparison. You might do it between your new and your old phone, but the chances are the screen technology is improved between those two, and so your newer one will be better. I actually think what's been a bigger difference for me is the clear black display technology that Nokia's introduced, which is sort of rearranging the screen elements, sort of basically promoting the polarizer, making it more effective. And, you know, so if you compare AMOLED without CBD with IPS with CBD, the IPS looks better, and equally true is the other way around as well. So if you're looking for a particular screen technology, I'd actually say CBD makes a bigger difference to day-to-day use, and that's mainly about it still being usable when you take it outside. You know, whether it's really bright sunlight, in which case it basically goes from being unusable to being okay, or just not normal daylight conditions, in which case it's suddenly, you know, it's okay without CBD, but with CBD, you know, it becomes a lot easier to use. And I think thinking about the way I've used my devices, you know, having to put a hand over things to shadow it, not having to do that with CBD is probably the biggest change I can think of in terms of screen technology. I mean, AMOLED, you know, in the sleeping screen, yes, I love that. And it's a nice feature, but having it usable outside is almost more important to me.
No, I do feel like I'm trapped in an episode of Sesame Street here. We have CBD, we have OLED, we have AMOLED. I mean, are there any other important letters, Steve, that we're missing this week?
I was going to make a comment about the HTC Titan, which is a totally different platform, but it is relevant, so bear with me. I've been reviewing this huge 4.7-inch screen Windows Phone device for our sister site, allaboutwindowsphone.com, plug, plug. And the screen on that is absolutely superb indoors. And what they've done is they've rearranged the layers to reduce the air gap to make it much, much clearer. It's using some of the tricks of CBD, but without going the whole way. But then you take it outdoors and you can't see it again because they haven't put the polarizing layers in. And this worth banging home, Rafe, that CBD is not just one trick, it's two tricks.
Definitely.
Or possibly even three tricks. You're rearranging the layers, you're reducing air gaps, and you're putting in 90-degree angled polarizers. And all three together make the difference. You can't just put one or two of those technologies in.
Yeah, and as I say, that's the thing that has made the biggest difference in screen technology. It's not the most interesting in some ways, but again, it's a kind of the real-world metric. It's made the biggest difference for me personally.
Yeah, yeah. While we're on devices, just a brief update, Rafe. We've got the Nokia 500, which is the last announced Anna device. That's in the house and the review is coming soon?
Yes, that's right. I've actually got it sitting in my hand right now, and I will get on with a review just as soon as possible. It's perhaps not quite such a high priority because I suspect not so many people are waiting for the review on this one. But it's interesting because it is basically the cheapest Symbian device ever. When you hold it in the hand, it does feel a bit plasticky, but it's definitely a move on from, if you like, the 5800 family of device, and that was the 5230, which felt quite blocky. This is actually relatively slimline. You know, it's the same plastics and sort of shiny plastics, and you know, obviously it doesn't feel as expensive as some of the devices higher up the range. But it should be an interesting one. It's actually running Symbian Anna, as you say, rather than Symbian Belle, although there are indications it will be getting Belle along with all the other devices. And so it's kind of a bit of a misstep in the kind of the release cycle, if you like. But it's also got slightly different insides, so it'll be interesting looking at those to see if they have an effect on performance. Not one for the smartphone geeks, but we like to give you comprehensive coverage, so we should have something on that very soon.
Yeah, if you can't face the review, Rafe, I'm very happy to do that one as well. So just avoid that attraction. Also, the 603, which is a slightly more upmarket device and with Symbian Belle on board. How are we doing for a review on that?
Well, I'm still trying to get hold of one of these. It hasn't really been released widely yet. Again, it's not going to be released in the UK as far as I know, so we'll have to track one down via other means. This is a kind of an interesting device because effectively it's like the 701 but in slightly cheaper materials. But when I saw it at Nokia World, I was really quite impressed by it because it has that same screen as the 701 and many of the same sensors, NFC and all of that, and the kind of the same processor and graphics platform. So it'll basically be a 701, but will knock another 50 euros or so off the price. So we've been saying nice things about the 701. I think we'll probably say pretty much the same thing about the 603. It's just a question of the materials used in it. So I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that one, and I will update everyone on the podcast once we get hold of one.
And while you're in plucking answers out of the air mood, any idea when the rest of us are going to get Bell on our N8, C7, C7s and so forth? Any idea?
I keep being asked this question, and I keep having to say there's no official answer beyond what Nokia said before, which was it would be out sometime in 2011. So we're starting to run out of year for it to be released on.
Indeed.
I mean, I guessed mid-December way back when it was announced, and I'm going to stick with that for now. Okay. So let's wait and see.
Yeah, is it fair to say that the devices like the X7 and the E6, which started off with Anna, they'll probably get Belle first, or would you think it will be a blanket release?
It wouldn't surprise me if some of the more recent devices get it first, but from what I was told, Nokia are looking to release them all relatively speaking at the same time. There will be a gap of, I would imagine, anything up to a month. You know, these releases do get staggered. And as with Anna, I'm sure we're going to get some people screaming in certain markets that it comes later for them. It won't be, you know, one big release all at the same time. And I'm sorry to say, probably those in the States are probably going to get it last again. But that's what you get for not buying enough Symbian smartphones.
Ha! Now, it's nearly Christmas, and Christmas is a time for giving, and Nokia has been giving, or at least partly giving. There's a slight mystery here. I'm calling this segment Sherlock Holmes and the Mystery of the Nokia Store Gift. Now, David, you wrote the story here. Some free applications have appeared on our C7s and 8s and other Symbian devices, but not all of them are actually gifts because some of them were free in the first place. What's going on here?
That's right. Depending on the model of phone, well, on every model of phone, you get 5 free applications, although... And the set of 5 varies from device to device that we found. But only the first 2 are paid for. The other 3 are Mood Agent, Nimbus Free, which is the ad-supported version, and eBuddy. And these have always been free. They are not free gifts. They are just free. The other paid-for application that seems to be universal is the full Angry Birds game. The other paid-for application we saw on the N8 was the Camera Lover Pack, which is £1.50. But on the C7, I believe you found, Steve, there was Joyku Spot Premium, which is worth £8. So C7 users were getting more value for their free gift.
Yeah, Joyku Spot Premium has been given away on several recent Symbian smartphones, including, I think, the E6 race. So that's something that is definitely worth looking out for. If that ever appears, grab it, because it's a great little way of tethering any device using any internet protocol to your Symbian smartphone. Well worth grabbing. But Rafe, any comment here? We've got Nokia saying, hey, here you are, here's 5 free things, but 3 of them were free anyway. Doesn't that rather devalue it all?
Well, it does seem a little bit Scrooge-like to me, or Grinch-like, but that's sort of the way marketing promotions tend to work. I mean, really, it's about encouraging people to download the applications. And actually, those of you who remember the kind of the summer games offering will know that Angry Birds was free over the summer for Symbian device users anyway, yeah, along with sort of 10 or 12 other games. And so I suspect those who are really into their free applications will probably have already got all of these titles. And as Steve says, Joyku Spot has been given away in various forms. But really, it's a way of encouraging people to, you know, download more applications and kind of a way of thanking them for upgrading to the latest version of the Ovi Store client. And that's what a lot of these promotions have been about. Nokia sort of advertise them a little bit in newsletters and say, you know, download this new client and we'll give you a free gift. And yeah, obviously there's advantage to them if they've got everyone on the latest version of the Nokia Store or Ovi Store client.
Yeah. Okay, well, that kind of explains that. Business calendar, let's move on with another item of software. This is something that Dave has looked at in the past. It's had a big new update, and it's worth noting here, I think, on the podcast, because it comes with a triple home screen widget. David, clarify.
Okay, well, Business Calendar is, obviously, it's an alternative calendar application. It gives you a whole new and very, very colourful user interface, and you can move your appointments around by actual drag and drop, which brings it in line with some applications on other platforms. As for the widgets, this is, when I originally reviewed version 1.0, widgets weren't there at all, and I believe people like me and Rafe were falling back on the coming next set of widgets. Since then, with version 1.3, which has just come out, there are you can have up to 3 home screen widgets on your home screen, which gives you a nice long list of what's coming up on your agenda. However, these widgets aren't built into the application. Business Calendar itself costs £3, and the widgets are actually separate downloads on the Ovi Store. The first 2 widgets are free because you have to use them in order, because right, it routes all the dates in order to, like, chunk 1, chunk 2, and chunk 3. First 2 are free, and the third one costs £1. So that brings the total cost of the application, if you want to use everything, to £4. It's well worth it if you like to have that use. Although, there's one thing I will just say. I mean, this may change with Symbian Belle, although something to bear in mind is that if you are using all 3, everything will get scattered between landscape and portrait because of the way Symbian counts its home screens.
Yeah, I'm just looking at your screenshots now. Yeah, so if you had them nicely lined up in landscape, you turn it to portrait and it's all messed up and every other widget, yeah.
Yeah.
Is this related to the old coming next widgets? Was this a new version or was it just a similar concept in terms of home screen and a presentation?
It's a similar concept, but it's much better executed because what coming next did, it pretty much did the same thing, gave you 3 widgets. When you tapped on them, it had its own kind of like very long, unwieldy list of dates that when you tapped on any of those, it took you to the built-in calendar application. These widgets are fully integrated into Business Calendar, and when you tap them, you go into Business Calendar straight away, which has got arguably better views, better presentation than the built-in calendar application. So I would say this is a much more integrated, holistic way of doing things than using coming next with the built-in calendar.
Yeah, do go and look at David's write-up. Business calendar updated up on the site at the moment. And don't be put off by the fonts used in the screenshots. That's because David's fuzzed out his personal details. That's not what you actually get. You actually get clear text. But some nice demonstrative screenshots, David, so thank you for that. Final item on the podcast. Hopefully this will get people disagreeing. There'll be conflict. There'll be battle. There'll be general arguments all around, I suspect. I want to talk about web browsers. Now, Opera Mobile and Opera Mini both had updates recently. They're being updated roughly about once a month each, in step with each other. They really are kind of perceived as the best third-party way to browse the web on our Symbian phone, and have been for probably the last 2 or 3 years. But I would contend, and this is just a point of contention, and we'll go around the panel on this, I would contend that the Symbian Anna web browser, you know, with the multi-windows now, with the URL bar at the top, much faster rendering, of course, I would contend that that's perfectly good enough. We don't actually need Opera Mini and Opera Mobile in the same way that we used to. Ewan, your thoughts, please.
Oh, dear. Right then. If you have Symbian Anna web browser, you need Opera. I still cannot get a hold of the Nokia web browser. But to be fair, I've never really got on with it since before the Nokia N95. It gets the information, but it feels bloated and big, and it's trying to do too much. The Opera Mini, Opera Mobile, I actually put in the same thing. I think Opera Mobile tries to do too much, and I very rarely use Opera Mobile. Opera Mini, on the other hand, I like, because it gets just the information I need. It squelches down for that small screen rendering. It goes, you know what, you're on a mobile. I'm going to give you a mobile experience. It's not trying to shoehorn in an actual desktop. Yes, I know, you can switch it into the desktop mode, you can. And the other thing is, Opera Mini, it has that back end. It allows you to sync the bookmarks through. That when I pick up a new device and I can just go, right, let's put Opera Mini on it. Who are you? I'm Ewan. Boom. Here's all your bookmarks. Here's all your favorites. Here's all your navigation sorted out. Here's it all done. And it just works, and it's exactly the same. I will always put Opera Mini on a device as quickly as I can. And okay, let's see what Bell does with the new browser. But to be honest,
Having tried several Bell devices, not an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, if I look back, I don't think Symbian's ever managed to do a web browser that doesn't feel in some way like it's missing something. Yes, it's functional, you know, and out of the box, it can do what you need it to do. But where is the grace?
Yeah, I suspect it's limited a certain amount by RAM and by processor power, and it's being slightly hobbled in terms of hardware. I think if you gave, certainly on the Nokia 701 with the 1 gigahertz processor and the extra RAM, the Symbian Bell browser does really rather fly along, and that's partly what prompted this question about suggesting that that's now enough. But I appreciate that not everyone's got the faster processor and more RAM. David, what's your thoughts on this, web or Opera?
Opera for me as well. Ewan said that the Symbian browser felt bloated when he first started. Well, to me, it's the opposite. It's always felt like a unfinished product. It always feels like the menus weren't quite done. They were in like a very rough form. And like Ewan was saying, the great thing with Opera is that you've got your bookmark sync. However, I will say that often on mobile devices, I often don't find that I need... I'm not often going back to sites that I've bookmarked. It's more that I will discover or read or get links from Twitter, and I will email or read it later links. Yeah. So the bookmarks aren't too important to me, but I think that the one pretty mundane feature that Opera does far, far better than Symbian Web, because Symbian Web doesn't do it at all, is the word wrap feature. Because especially if you have like near-sight issues, and you want to like zoom in as much as you can with the Symbian browser, even the newest incarnations, you have to keep scrolling sideways to read everything. Whereas Opera has just got fantastic text wrapping. I know that's really boring, but it's really important too.
If you were in Parliament, hey!
Agreement from Edinburgh there. Rafe, any position on this? Are you going to agree as well?
Well, initially, when you brought up this item, I thought, yeah, it's Opera, wonderful, yes, installed it immediately. And I paused and thought, well, actually, what have I been doing recently? And I've been using the Symbian Anna, I've been using the built-in browser because it's been good enough. I mean, Opera Mobile and Opera Mini used to be one of the first things I installed on a device. Opera Mini mainly for kind of low bandwidth situations or something very quick, and Opera Mobile if I was going to do an extended bit of browsing. And, you know, I, like a lot of people, I did the trick whereby you can redirect some of the sort of system shortcuts so it opened up in Opera Mobile. It never felt entirely satisfactory. But actually, I was thinking about the way I've been using the E6 and some of the other Anna devices, other Symbian 3 devices around. And actually, although I have got Opera on some of them, I've not really used it very much recently. So I'm actually with Steve here on this one. It's good enough for me. The text wrapping issue that Dave brings up is an interesting one. Actually, I quite like the fact it doesn't do it because it's what I'm used to. And it always used to annoy me slightly. But I don't have too much of a problem reading the small screens, as you probably gathered earlier when we were talking about font sizes. So yes, I have to agree with Steve on this one, much against my judgment. If I thought about it from the beginning, I'd have said, no, Opera, wonderful. And you know, I'd still recommend people download it and give it a try because it is free. But actually, thinking about my usage, I'm using the standard browser. So there you go.
Well, just to end on a conciliatory note with Riff. I agree. Symbian Web is good enough, and yes, I will often just drop into it to look at a quick website if I'm not going to have an extended browsing session. And but one thing with Opera, especially if you do go into the Symbian free settings and make it your default browser, the one thing that Web has got an edge on Opera with is startup speed. Opera does take a long time to start up, so if you have got that as your default browser, and every time you tap a link in Gravity or email, it's like, oh, I've got to wait now. Wait. Here we go. Okay, I'll start now.
Yeah, the one thing I would say is I absolutely agree with you. And although I'm saying that Web is probably good enough, especially on these newer Bell devices, for most operations, you probably don't need Opera Mobile so much as you used to. I would agree with you in that certainly on slower connections, I mean, the compression technology built in Opera Mini carries on being splendid, and probably with the single column view, yeah, they call it, where you, as you say, provide a pure mobile view.
And we mustn't forget bandwidth usage. You know, it's all well and good for us over here who've got, you know, unlimited data bundles. If you go roaming, if you're on an American contract that only gives you a limited amount of data, if you're on one of the smaller tariffs in the UK that only gives you 250 megabytes a month, you know, the Symbian Anna browser is a full-blown let's pull everything down. And, you can see the counter going around and going ding, 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 ding. You know, Opera Mini has many, many advantages. And we have to remember, you know, smartphones should be, you know, are very much resource dependent. And we are not, just because we are in a resource-rich network doesn't mean that that's the same for everybody else around the world. I'd contend that Opera Mini has done more for mobile bandwidth saving and saved more money than any other browser on the planet.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And I'll just give a tip to people. If you want to use a full-blown Opera Mobile browser, you can actually do so and turn on sort of extra compression and sort of proxy stuff within the settings so it operates a bit more like Opera Mini, and thereby you get some of the advantages of using a full browser in terms of, you know, Ajax features and some of the more advanced web features working. And again, if you're in a bandwidth-constrained environment, that can work pretty well. So yes, I think, I mean, I still have it installed and I've used it when I'm roaming and things like that. And as Ewan says, on those bandwidth constrained occasions, it's difficult to beat Opera. And there are a couple of other proxy-based browsers out there that work just as well. And for the same reason, you know, they may also be worth a download.
Yeah, as Rafe says, they're all free. So one's a bit, the Symbian Web's obviously built in, and you can download both of the other Opera browsers at m.opera.com in your browser. Just go there. And certainly Opera Mini saves the day when I'm actually out and about in the countryside and I'm on GPRS at some ridiculously slow data speed. I think, no problem. Web can't handle this because it's just way too many bytes. Opera Mini will do the job, and normally it does. So it's definitely worthwhile keeping there. One final word from David, and then we'll finish.
Oh, it's another thing about bookmarks. It's big. I mean, it's great to have the potential of desktop integration via the cloud. However, there's a lot of people out there who will slam me for this, but hey, it's good to get comments. It's just a shame about the desktop browser. I mean, the user interface, it looks like something I used to use on a Sun workstation at university 10 years ago.
What, you mean an iMac?
No, worse.
Oh, God, now I'm going to get slammed. You can't compare an iMac to a university station. It's a completely different kernel.
I think I'm losing control of this podcast, so I'm going to finish it quickly. Thank you very much for listening. It's a goodbye in Sussex from...
Goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And a goodbye up in Hull.
From at David Gilson on Twitter.
Plug, plug. And a goodbye up in Edinburgh.
Indeed, yes, and the sun has come out. I'll just say goodbye to it. I shall see it again in April.
Yeah, are you off on your travels again? Are you missing from the podcast next week, Ewan?
I possibly may well be, yes. Armenia, here I come. You want bandwidth restrained? Listen to this.
If people want to know what's happening in Armenia, then go look at Ewan's blog, whose URL is?
EwanSpence.com.
There we are, lovely. And you can, of course, at allaboutsinmin.com, at AAS on Twitter. And a goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield. We'll catch you next week on the Inside Podcast.